Hi, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Robbie.
And we are the hosts of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
If you're like us, then you're basking in the glow of a great comic book movie summer.
So if you want to join the discussion on Thunderbolts, Superman, or Fantastic Four, and what makes those films so great, or take a look back at the Marvel Cinematic Universe and its illustrious history,
then check out Friends from Work wherever you get your podcasts, and we will see you there.
You want the Play-Doh food?
That's in my notes!
I know it is!
Did you see my notes?
No, I did not!
You looked at my notes!
It's in my notes as well!
It's in my notes!
Yep. Captain's Pod, Stardate 1931-35.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she still doesn't know what a bunt is. It's Ambassador Danae.
Is it a cake?
I feel like there's an English bunt.
Well, there's definitely a bunt cake.
No, there's not.
Yes, there is.
Right, I'm Googling that now.
Okay, well, prepare bunt yourself cake. To be like, oh, you're right, and then an apology. See, there it is.
There we go. Yeah. I didn't feel too strongly about that. That looks terrible. Bump cake looks... Anyway, it's Captain's Pod time, Ambassador. How are you this week?
Man, I have stepped in dog shit, started my period, had to break up a cat fight.
That's all since last week.
It's been a lot. Let me just say also, can I amend it?
Yes.
Barefooted, stepped in dog
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
Wait, can I amend it?
Yeah.
Barefooted, stepped in liquid warm.
Yeah.
Dog shit. Which actually made me slide across the hardwood floor and pull my groin while on my period.
It's just a rough start. I imagine there's one area you don't want to pull whilst bleeding is a groin.
Yeah.
Welcome to the most graphic opening to Captain's Pod. All of the visual stuff
like.
None of that would have been allowed on the television in the 1960s, which is an excellent segue into the episode we're doing this week.
Are we watching OG today?
We are going back to TOS.
Because you've been humming the theme song, and it got into my head, too. So when we sat down to record, you were already doing the theme music.
Yeah, I was. As I was making the coffee, I shifted into the Strange New World theme, which has more drums. So it was like, dum-dum. No doubt there will be more of that and cat stories in the outtakes. So listen to the end of the show for the outtakes.
But I promise the graphics are over. I just got it all done with here at the top.
Do not promise that.
I'm so sorry, everybody.
People want it. I'm sure they do. This week, we are continuing our fan favorite Star Trek theme with an episode submitted by Sarah Superior. And it's going to be season 2, episode 10, Journey to Babel, based on that title. I can't wait to hear what your prediction is going to be.
Babel?
Yeah, Journey to Babel. B-A-B-E-L.
That's Babel.
It's Babel, I think.
No.
It's Babel.
That's Babel.
I mean, I don't think anybody calls it Journey to... I could be wrong. No, it's Babel. It's Babel. Journey to Babel. We're about to watch the episode, so we'll find out. So in 10 forward, you can lambast me for being incorrectly pronunciating, or we can not. I'm sure it's Babel.
Mm-hmm.
So you predict that everybody will be pronouncing it incorrectly.
I predict that maybe this is a word that Star Trek has changed just a bit, and it's going to be whatever the show wants it to be. But anytime I've ever heard that word, which is mostly church-related, it's always been Babel.
As in, what is it?
The Tower of Babel.
I always thought it was the Tower of Babel. This is amazing. Oh, God.
Yeah. That's the story that it explains the different languages being given to all of the people.
Like, it does?
Yes. So like in the Bible, there's a tower and I can't remember. Hold on. Let me do the quick like AI version here.
God damn it.
After the Great Flood, humanity united by a single language decided to build a city with a tower that reached the heavens. God, seeing their pride and ambition, confused their language, causing them to abandon the project and scatter across the earth. So, So God punished the human race for trying to reach as high as they possibly could and like, you know, talk to God about the whole flood situation. And God's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make it to where you guys can't understand each other anymore. And then they all started speaking different languages and they went to different parts of the world.
What a dick. I feel like the Old Testament, most of the stories end with, and God was a dick to humanity.
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of spoiling the episode. So
because if you said, what do you think that this is going to be about? I would have said, this sounds like the Tower of Babel, which is a Bible story.
Yeah. It's not exactly that, but it'll be interesting to see the correlations. Damn it, Bible spoiling Star Trek.
I'm excited, or damn it, Star Trek, for taking from the Bible.
Yeah, for taking from the Bible so much. Yeah,
No. Star Trek definitely influenced the Bible. That's how this goes. I'm most excited for today, though, to get back to the point that Kasera has been one of the longtime live show viewers. And so I'm really excited to see her favorite. It's kind of interesting. Like, this season of Star Trek becomes very personal.
Yeah, it's been one of my favorite things is to read emails from everybody. And first of all, the minimal amounts of overlap has been staggering. And it speaks to, like, how personal Star Trek can be. So I love reading the emails and knowing, like, getting an image of the person from the five episodes they've submitted and what makes them tick about Star Trek and what they love. Yeah, super fun season. With that, let's head over to the holodeck to watch Journey to Babel, and we will see you in 10 forward for a full babbling debrief. To the beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, Ambassador, is it Babel or Babel?
Oh my God. It was only said once.
Yeah, and that's all we needed. What would you like from the replicator?
Did he say it wrong?
No, he said Babel.
I know he said Babel, but yeah. Do you think that, like...
Nope.
You don't...
Nope.
I've been thinking about it nonstop. It was so distracting during the entire... I kept waiting for it to be said again so that I could be like, oh, no, it's a purposeful pronunciation.
I think it could very well be the cast, like, just mispronouncing things, because the Klingons for a long time were called Klingon because they didn't, like, put a hard O-N on it. So the cast just assumed Klingon was the right thing to say. So pronunciations do change. If Babel ever came up again, and I can't remember if... it does come up again in the animated series. But I can't remember if they call it Babel or Babel, but I think they stuck with Babel.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
Which is fine.
But it makes me wonder if I've been saying it wrong my entire life.
I mean, I as will not be surprising to anybody, knew about Babel through Star Trek before I knew any biblical reference, so I'm not the person to ask. Because in my head, it's always going to be Babel.
But I also wonder if it's just like... So okay, you know, you being a British man... Does everyone say Babel? Like,
I don't know. I can't speak on behalf of the. I mean, I could be. It could be.
What if that's just?
I'm just in the wrong circles. That could be an English versus American pronunciation thing. It really could.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. We don't know. I do want to say right here though that when it comes to pronunciation things, we are doing something here in the house. Anytime Ian's around Iris, she attempts to adopt something new. And right now she's trying to change her saying the word pants to trousers. And it's fantastic.
It's so funny. She said at breakfast, she said, and these are pants.
And she was holding up her underwear.
Holding up the underwear, which is fine to say because you have that word in England. Yes.
It was amazing. So yeah, it could be a pronunciation thing. It could just be a strange word thing. We'll never know. I wasn't able to find anything on a Google search before we started to record today. I did try to look it up to see... But there were others like me who were confused if we've been saying it wrong our whole life. I don't think I have been because, you know, I think it's about who you're around. And I was around a bunch of Christians and they all said Babel. So yeah. I'm going to go with them, I suppose.
You're going to go with the Christians. Amazing. Mm. So what would you like from the food slot?
This is easy.
Yes.
Yeah. I
know what you want. I know what you want. Can I guess?
Yes, of course.
You want the Play-Doh food.
That's in my notes.
I know it is.
Did you see my notes?
No, I did not.
You looked at my notes.
It's in my notes as well.
It's in my notes.
Yep.
I want the Play-Doh balls.
It's all Play-Doh balls. And they spend so much time with the tiny people that are like pouring it in and then adding water. Like, no, too much.
I want wine-soaked Play-Doh balls.
They were so proud of that food prep because they spend so much time on that establishing shot of it. Yeah.
It was a very confident shot.
Confident shot.
Either that or they really like the extras in that exact moment.
They really do. They really do. Like, I mean,
we painted these people in gold. You will look at them.
We painted them gold.
A solid 20 seconds.
Yeah. Look at all of the aliens that we've splashed out. Instead of like spreading them out throughout the season, we're going to put them all in one episode.
One room.
Yeah. Blow it all. We've got the makeup guy for one day and they are going to do a great job.
So Are you wanting the same thing? Are we both getting the same thing from the replicator today?
No, I want a ship that can travel at warp 10, but only for one episode and then it blows up. Because I don't know what warp 10 means.
It means fucking fast. That means
it should mean more than that tonight. Anyway, give us a synopsis of this layered, multifaceted episode of the original series.
Yeah, this episode has so much going on. I can definitely see why it would be a fan favorite. There's like when we got to the murder mystery part of it, I was like, oh, shit.
Yes, a new genre.
Oh, wow.
We're doing this now.
So it's like the only thing that this episode is missing is a wedding. So like we could talk about... We could talk about, like, there is everything in this. We have open heart surgery.
Yes.
We have family drama. We have mom slapping children. I mean, okay, grown man, but still. We have councils that are going to be either making peace or going to war. Like, we have Andorians. We have black-eyed missing people.
Black-eyed missing people?
Their eyes are just gone.
The Tellarites. So, you know,
freaky shit.
I love that, just to side rail you a little bit, I love the prosthetic work on everything in this episode.
Yes.
But I wanted you to remember, you know, Jank and Pog from Prodigy that we recently watched?
Yes.
Same species.
Okay.
Tellarites.
So I knew that from somewhere. It was in my notes to ask you.
Yes.
That I remember there being a line recently about, like, you like to argue there's some kind of, and maybe if it was in an episode of Strange New Worlds or possibly Lower Decks where there was a conversation happening at a table and the species likes to argue, so that was kind of used. Was that in Strange New World?
No, it was. It may be, but it was definitely in. It was definitely in Prodigy, because I think Janeway. I can't remember exactly, but I think she uses the same line that Sarek does, which is "Tellarites, you just like to argue, and it doesn't matter about what." So, but I think it's Admiral Janeway that says something along those lines to Jankum.
So, yeah, so the basis of this episode, I guess also in this episode, you have stabbings, you have stunnings, you have spies, there's also, you're being chased. So there's a bunch going on, and the episode just clips right on through, and it puts everybody into unique positions, whether they're, it almost like subverts each character's usual role just a little bit, like from different people being in positions of authority throughout the episode.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So there's a lot of motion and activity, but it starts off with a big surprise that Spock's parents have come for a visit.
Bum, bum, bum.
And not just because they were invited for, you know, normal, like, hey, parents come over and have like Sunday roast. But no, it's because they're ambassadors of some important kind, and Spock just didn't give anybody a heads up about that. So
yeah,
there's
no logical reason to share that. Yeah, my parents are coming on board.
So it is a very Vulcan kind of forward episode, more to be learned about the Vulcan culture. And really, I think the most important thing that you're going to learn this episode is that when you're married, the two-finger touchdown is the business. That's where it's at. That's
she
how you
who is
really
my wife.
Know
yeah.
if things are going well. If you're touching fingers in public, that's
if
a big deal.
If your lady is DTF in your special quarters, she's going to give you two fingers and you got to give them right back.
Yeah.
So overall thoughts and feelings, Ambassador, did you like the episode? What were some highlights for you?
Well, was that an okay recap? Because if you want me to actually give like a rundown of what happens this episode and some sort of like more than just listing things.
I mean, go for it. I always love hearing what you take out of an episode and what sticks in your brain.
I think because there's so much packed in this episode, what's really happened is that there is a... the Enterprise has been sent to collect a whole bunch of different kinds of very important people that are going to be going to this council on this planet, Babel, to discuss peace talks, because one of the planets has a lot of dilithium crystals, if I remember correctly. And there's so much planet to be mined and so few people that there's a lot of opportunity for it to be like... illegally mined, I guess, like for just nefarious activity to happen. And so
they don't have a lot of defenses or ability to protect themselves.
So there's a lot of invested interest from many people to protect the planet and kind of bring it all together, but it's a very like touchy subject. And so everyone has different opinions, and instead of putting everybody in their own room, they've shoved them all into one room together to drink. So, so the idea is that the Enterprise is just going to go from point A to point B. And
glorified taxi. The flagship of Starfleet is a taxi service for delegates.
And unfortunately, for them, some very clever pirates of space have figured out, and I only know that because of
Tendi.
Yep, that's
it. There we go. I get your noises.
Tendi from Lower Decks is an Orion. So from watching that show and them kind of like going more into it, that was really interesting for me because I...
Yes, like, you have some context. Yeah, I love that.
This seems to be maybe like an offhand mention. Like maybe Lower Decks would have taken that Orion reference and then spun into something deeper like later on. But the Orions have planted a spy into this group by... dressing them up or genetically altering them to look Andorian. And so they're receiving signals from an Orion ship. And I think the idea is just to cause as much chaos as possible to kind of subvert this whole thing happening. But I don't know. Did they poison Spock's dad? Because
No. This is what's wild about this episode is that it crafts so many different storylines together and
it's
different,
so
like we said, so many
complex.
Different genres. Spock's Sarek is just he has a heart condition. Like he's old by human standards, but kind of like middle age, I would say like 60s by human standards, but he has a heart condition, and it's completely separate from anything else. Completely separate. It's just a driver to make the command stuff difficult towards the end of the episode and to give like Spock away for them to connect. It has nothing to do with the Orions. Totally separate.
It's interesting because I was trying to search through my notes. I don't know if you could hear my alarms going off, but it wasn't finding it. But I was looking through my notes because I think there was a reference to it happening two times before, and I thought that it was like during this thing. So I wondered if it was opposing sides.
Yeah, one time was earlier, and then he went to see his doctor, and then another time happened
before
they went onto the ship, and a third time was on the ship, and the fourth time was in his quarters.
Got it, okay.
Yeah.
So he's having a heart condition issue, and somehow the Andorian, the fake Dorian, figures that...
Fodorian.
The Fodorian.
Fodorian, no, they're all wearing fedoras.
Yeah. manages to murder someone like a Vulcan would murder someone to set up Sarek as the bad guy of the episode. So they're investigating Sarek. They're finding out that Sarek has a heart condition. They're trying to figure out who the spy is. And mixed in all of this, they've also added that there needs to be a blood transfusion. Spock has part blood. There's all of this talk about, and then there's open heart surgery during an attack. Oh, by the way, Kirk was stabbed.
I love that so
also,
much.
So he's kind of down. So like the episode really is kind of like when a pressure cooker episode.
Yeah.
Where every single scene is kind of meant to put somebody into an uncomfortable position, including Spock at one point deciding he was going to let his father die so that he could lead the Enterprise, and Kirk deciding he was going to get out of bed.
That is my single favorite plot thing of the episode. It's so, there's so much that this episode does to like subvert the usual, like we're in trouble, the ship is in danger. It's really, really well done. I love this episode a lot.
Yeah. So it's kind of like it highlights the relationship between Spock, his parents, Spock, his friends on the ship, that you get to see like what they're willing to do to help Spock and Spock's family out. And then, of course, everything kind of turns out okay in the end because they kill an entire ship of Orions.
Yeah, they sure do. It's really interesting that one of the weird things about this episode is that the species can all do things, whatever abilities they need for the plot is the thing that they have. So Orions can suddenly do incredible prosthetic work. They can modify their ships to jump to warp 10 for a certain amount of time and then blow up. The Orions aren't really famous for that from here onwards.
Yeah, I kind of thought... So it was an Orion in disguise. Or was it an Orion that had augmented themselves and then just like taped on the antenna?
No, it's an Orion in disguise, cosmetically altered to look like an Andorian. Okay. So I guess they got a very small Orion.
Interesting. Amazing. Chat corrected that that Enterprise didn't kill the Orions. The Orions blew themselves up.
So correct.
So yes. That's
true. Thank you, live chat.
Okay. So that's kind of a little more detail. That was a very, very detailed. Like you said, there's a lot of heavy lifting in this episode, but not heavy lifting in a way where it's on one topic and it has to catch you up.
No.
It's that there's just a bunch of things kind of all going on at once. And I think it was really clever because the idea is that the decision Spock has to make has to be one where he would say no to saving his father's life because protocol would dictate him to stay at the head of the ship. So, yeah, I thought it was an interesting episode. What did you, so overall thoughts and feelings on it?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yay!
What about you? Is this one of your faves?
Yeah, it really is one of my faves. I mean, I'm a sucker for Sarek. He appears multiple times throughout Star Trek, played by various different actors. Mark Leonard is my favorite Sarek.
This one?
Yeah, that's this one. He is, I think, my favorite Vulcan. Because for me, he embodies almost more, this is going to sound sacrilegious, but almost more than Spock what I expect a Vulcan to be. Because Spock does let his human half kind of in a lot more, especially as he ages as well, and when we like kind of revisit him in TNG. But Mark Leonard is like, and Sarek is 100% Vulcan, logic to a T, but he's not these like corrupt evil Vulcans, like the Vulcan that we saw last week, the caricature of a Vulcan. Like, he is such...
He's more stoic?
The stoic archetype of what a Vulcan should be. Like, he is very much the template that every other Vulcan is kind of based off of now. Because Spock isn't a great template with his half-human side. So with Tuvok in Voyager, I see more of Sarek in Tuvok than I see Spock. So he's so, so great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the character as well. Although, like, it's strange to me that it's illogical for him to give his own son the Vulcan salute. Like, it seems that and I think we're going to see this a lot. And anytime I see a Vulcan, I don't understand what is logical and illogical.
Agreed. Yeah,
because
that
to me was a very emotional snide kind of a thing.
It feels very snipey and bitter, doesn't it? It feels like I will give you what it should be.
Like, I don't approve
of you. I'll salute you as like, I'm saluting the uniform, not the person.
Right.
So he should disregard that that's his son.
Right.
And give, so what he's basically saying is, I don't think you're Vulcan, which feels a bit shitty. Yeah, right. I'm with you there.
I mean, and maybe that's true. And I thought, oh, he only does the Vulcan salute to Vulcans, but he immediately does it to the Doctor. So I do like this character too. It was really interesting to see him. I'm a little confused by some of the things, but I also know that TOS is making this shit up as they go, guys. Like, this is the beginning
100%.
Of it. Yeah. And we're kind of seeing the creative wheels begin to churn, and from this will come so much more content, books and TV and movies that will try to like find the rules and find the nuance and refine what a Vulcan would and wouldn't say. And so I think like I'm more comfortable with the Vulcans I see now. Like I'm more comfortable with Strange New Worlds Vulcan or what other Vulcans have I seen? I guess like T'Lyn.
T'Lyn, Lower Decks.
I really like T'Lyn.
Yeah.
She seems to be one that understands also, like, it might be illogical for me to say this, but it's logical because I'm with my friends and I'm going to jibe with them a little bit. Like, she's kind of finding her way into that. So seeing this character was really, really interesting, but I liked how, like, familiar he looks. They found an actor that, to me, kind of emulated Spock a bit.
It's so interesting. I'm so convinced that he is Leonard.
Even the vocal range?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so convinced that he's Leonard Nimoy's father. And, yeah, but he's the vocalization that really does it. Like, the delivery that he gives as a Vulcan is so, so, so good. It's, you kind of feel like he's watched a lot of Spock. Like, I don't know this for certain, but I imagine he watched some episodes to really get the Vulcan kind of dialect right. But maybe they just had a really good vocal coach as well that was really clear on what Vulcan should sound like. And he reappears in TNG in one of my favorite episodes of TNG as well. And it's so cool to see the same actor, same character, but after like 20 more years of Star Trek, has been around and how he plays a Vulcan 20 years later. Oh, he's so good. Mark Leonard is incredible. So, so good. The other gift that this episode gives us that I absolutely love and is something pretty rare is a variety of...
Open heart surgery?
Yes, open heart surgery, yes. Better than open brain surgery, which happens in another episode. Not kidding. And what I love is the variety of aliens that aren't just, hey, a different alien, a different human with like a nose ridge or a human with like some markings or something. Like Andorians, Tellarites. I believe it's the first appearance of both the Andorians and the Tellarites.
Oh.
And I know you are a big fan of cosmetics and whatnot.
I do
so
love.
Did you love seeing some aliens?
Yes. I always love looking at the TOS set. I kind of giggle when he goes to the wall to have a conversation and, you know, these kind of unique things that are so different in my modern Trek.
Yeah, no comm badges. Literally have to go to the wall unit.
Yes. And so similar, it's always fun to see how, I think this episode probably had some updates. What do they call it? Where they've altered it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the shuttle
thing arriving, coming in. Yeah.
Yeah, the ship exploding. They do a lot with like the external shots where they had an opportunity to update it for HD.
But then there's so much that you know isn't, and some of it's going to be the prosthetic work, and some of it's going to be the costuming or the fight sequence in the hallway, which I think is the real highlight of this episode, personally.
I love that so much. We're not gonna blow past that. It is a gift. It is such a sudden cut to Kirk insanity, because I think they're just talking in sick bay, and then it's sudden cut to we have no idea why this fight is happening.
I love it.
And then the double kick off of the wall into body slam, which I'm sure hurts Kirk more than the Andorian.
I've learned something. I can't talk about Kirk action and have you not just like run off on
I'm sorry. I love it so much because it's all him. He's like, this moment is about me. I'm going to double fist punch you. I'm going to do some crazy acrobatics. It's so fun.
I love the prosthetic work. And what was really interesting to put like a little kind of connecting point to the Kirk fight in the hallway. And this is like the prosthetics seem to stay on during that fight, which is really, really good. You know, anytime the wigs can stay on and all of that, it still manages to work.
Are you talking about Shatner's wig or the Andorian's wig?
Does he wear a wig?
He wears a toupee.
I forget that every time.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he's so handsome. When he takes his shirt off this episode, I literally have an entire line that's just like, yes. Are you okay?
Yeah, sorry. I didn't spat my coffee out.
Oh my God. He's so handsome.
I just remembered the first time he takes his shirt off in this episode, the first of two times, there's no need for him to be topless.
Sure there is. I wanted to see that.
There's no need. He's just like...
you okay?
I'm good. He's just in his quarters, like answering the computer. It's like, look at my nipples.
Is that what you were looking at?
Yes.
I was looking at his arms, his broad shoulders.
Yeah. That's really nice. He's a chunky boy.
He's got these like beautiful like eyes. He's just a very handsome. The way that they shoot him when he's talking to people, like the camera angles are, and the light hits his eyes and stuff.
The hero pose.
They know what they're doing. So, you know, well done, camera folks, cinematographers back in the day.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
He's always got this like little smirk on his face, but when he does the action fight scenes, that's when things just, they go into a place of entertainment I do not go except for when I watch TOS fight scenes. Like, I don't have anything else because I never got into like the kung fu, you know, like the old movies with the old fighting. I never watched like Texas Ranger, which these are the extreme shows I can think of where there was fighting. There was a show in like the 70s where there was a charger car and the two like the Duke boys that would get out.
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, like
yeah, and the A-Team.
I never watched these, so I don't even know if I'm giving references that make sense to my point. That's little I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But those kind of like telegraphed fight sequences are not banked in my brain. The first items to go there in a crazy turn of events in 2025, 2024, whenever we watched the first TOS and I saw the first fight, was it the Gorn fight was my first?
Yes.
How many people can say that this type of fighting, the first time they ever saw it at all, is something that was filmed in like whenever this was filmed, 60s or whatever.
Yep.
Like that's so freaking crazy. I've managed to avoid anything to compare it to. So anytime it happens, it's like this dazzling misfiring / firing of neurons in my brain that are like, this is something that you're looking at and you don't have anything to compare it to. Isn't it amazing and hilarious and stupid and crazy? And like, don't you like oddly respect it all at the same time? But isn't it like super dumb? Why is he putting both of his feet on the wall during a fight?
It's incredible.
Why did he do that?
What a power move. It's because he has a huge dick. That's why. It's just an absolute power move. Like, just wrestling nonsense. I love it.
It was so crazy. I thought he, and this makes sense that he wouldn't do it because of course this is a, it's a hazard to the other person that you're acting with.
Yeah.
But he literally went airborne with his feet going out and I thought, oh my God, he's gonna kick this guy. That's awesome. But then it goes to the wall and that's when my brain stopped. I was like, that makes no sense.
You burst. You cackled with laughter.
It was so great.
And I knew it was coming. I was like, just wait, which is why I got the GIF ready for anybody that wants to look at the live video of this.
Oh my gosh.
We've got a beautiful GIF of it up on screen.
It's so fun. Yeah. But to go back to the question at hand, I loved the prosthetics. It was so fun to watch something like that, to see an Andorian fighting Kirk, to watch the antenna flap around, to like, I don't know. It was a jarring moment because we were going from scene to hallway where there's a fight. And I think, you know, it felt really like, whoa, what's happening here? So like you were really put into an off-putting situation. But the scene where everybody's kind of like milling around and your eyes are sort of allowed to wander through the room and you see people in various colored robes and different kind of skin tones, different clothing, different sewing patterns, this sort of attempt at showing the audience at this time what diversity could look like at some point in the future. And then adding in the prosthetic work, like the mask of the Telluride
is
so scary.
It's so good. I really love it.
So scary. They managed to extend the brow to the nose bridge and then completely leave the eye sockets black so that you just can't see how there's no eye. It's so off-putting. And then they give it this sort of, I don't know, pig-esque nose sort of a thing, almost like you would see some tusks or something. They're hairy. They have really interesting hands and they have an opportunity at one scene to show it holding a cup. And they were very wise to put a red cup inside all of the fur so you could see, you know, kind of the dimensions of this hand. They gave it a really good costuming as well because the silver stood out against the fur. So it sort of like gave this idea that they have like a unique sort of, I don't know, like space alien, like David Bowie sort of styling clothes, but then like Chewbacca-esque buddies with their fur. And then to make them argumentative in their verbiage and to give Sarek the lines that you know that they're an argumentative approach, even if like, I think we're meant to not like them. And I think it was such a nice way to, again, I use the word subvert our expectations. When he comes up dead, you're suddenly like, oh no.
Oh no, like, they weren't the aggressors,
even though
really.
He was really like aggressive and kind of annoying and a little off-putting. Yeah. Like he's now died and he's upside down as well. Super creepy.
And it's just their thing. Like their thing is arguing. And TOS, I think, kind of started this Star Trek trope of species being known by one thing.
Yeah.
So Vulcans are known for logic.
Right.
Klingons are known for being all about war and conquering. Romulans are sneaky tacticians and you can't trust them. Tellarites just like to argue. And this continues all the way through TNG. It's only really Lower Decks that subverts that and starts bringing in some of the, well, not all of them are like that because that's problematic. And they'll bring in characters like Tendi. They're like, well, yeah, not all Orions are slaves. A lot of them are. Slavers and space pirates. But yeah, a lot of them are. And not all of the Orion girls are dancers. But yeah, throughout, TOS really started that trope of this one species to remember them and to make them memorable have to have this defining characteristic about them, which works for these like little bottle episode stories, because when they come on screen, you're like, I know what this episode is going to be about. I know kind of what to expect from this alien.
And this is not an episode where you know what to expect.
No, it doesn't give you chance.
You're shifting between things like you think, oh, this is going to be then about Kurt. I'm sorry, about Spock and his parents. No. Okay. It's going to be about, you know, his dad and this fight. No, it's going to be about his dad having a heart attack and he needs to have surgery. No, this is about his past and having a a very scary teddy bear. No, this is about, and just kind of keep shifting it around so much so that when we get to the intense part, there's so much in my brain.
Yeah.
I kind of lose a little bit of what I sometimes enjoy about Star Trek, which is the hierarchy of it all. So when it builds up to Spock being in the position of the captain and having to make his decisions, there's so much already crammed in my brain that I'm almost not respecting that as much as I want to, because it really was putting the focus on like heart surgery and, you know, that was really the big drama of it all. But I think the audience, I mean, would understand, especially at this time, like open heart surgery is a huge deal. You know, technology hasn't advanced medically as much as it has now. So, you know, where we have pacemakers that are, you know, inside of our hearts and they can literally dial in your heart rate now with like a little, they can make it go down. They can make it go up just by kind of like operating a little system. Back in the 60s, that was a huge deal, you know? So I think they needed to make something that would relate to the audience that something major is happening between these characters that we're rooting for to have a relationship. And that was a great way to do it. But it was a very central part of this episode that had many central parts.
Yeah, it's really hard to nail down. If you want to ask me what this episode is about, I guess it's about Spock and his relationship to his dad. The thing is, it's not really what we spend a lot of time on. And nothing really changes by the end of the episode. So if you're looking for a plot that has an arc, it doesn't have one if you focus on that. Like, the plot that has an arc in the story there is about the murder mystery and the mystery ship and the communication that's happening between whoever the spy is on the ship. Like, that's the thing that has a resolution, but it's nowhere near as important as the Spock and his dad thing. So, on a rewatch for me, this episode does so much better because I can put that to one side and I know that there's a lot of different things coming and just enjoy it.
Yeah. But
I tried to put myself in the brain of watching this for the first time, and it is jarring because you start off with political intrigue, and then you go into soap opera family drama, then you go into murder mystery, then you go back into espionage a bit, then it's medical drama, working out what's wrong with Sarek, and then back into the conspiracy spy mystery thing. So much more fun when you just try not to think about that and just enjoy it as a wild ride of a movie.
As a first watch, I did enjoy it because it's just like a bump, 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 bump. And it did feel like a movie, even though it wasn't a movie length. You know, they packed a lot into this episode. And I think what's interesting, too, is I'm remembering that most of the time when we talk about TOS, there's a different pace to it. This had a more modern pacing feel where it was really like moving us through the sequences. And so it felt more familiar in some of those ways. Yeah. But if I was to be asked, what is the point of this episode? I think it's actually stitching back together of his parents' relationship with Spock. I think this is an episode about Spock and his relationship with his parents and his willingness and his dedication to Star Trek. I think this is a Spock episode. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I think so. And it's never mentioned on screen, but one of the scenes I really love is when I think it's Amanda, his wife, Sarek's wife's name, Spock's mum. Amanda is like, you're actually proud of Spock. Like, you won't admit it, but I can tell. Like, I know you better than anyone. Yeah. I know that you're proud. You don't agree with him, but you are proud that he's in Starfleet and that if he's going to be here, he's excelled. And he's a commander. He's on the flagship. He's really well respected. Kirk thinks highly of him and everybody thinks highly of Kirk. But he never admits that. And they never have a moment at the end of the episode where Sarek is like, I do respect you, son, and I'm happy you went your own way. And I'm glad they don't. But it's just, it's interesting that there is no development. It's more about Amanda being frustrated and maybe just between the three of them coming to a resolution that there won't be a resolution. Like, perhaps they can talk to each other and be civil, but there will never be a reconciling in the human sense. And that, I mean, that gets picked up again in TNG as well, which is very, well, actually, it gets picked up again in the movies. And then in TNG again.
It is interesting that we usually, for the most part, are very akin to stories that have a bow, a button up, a sort of coming together, something that makes us feel like we're not a bit undone.
Yeah.
There's so much undoing in our actual real lives. So we seek out stories and mediums that help us to kind of have an outlet where there is resolution of some kind. And the idea that they're giving Spock an irresolved relationship with his family in how maybe maybe we want our relationships to be. I can't speak for everybody, but like when I have a relationship that is awkward or like not what I want it to be and I want to work at it and come up with it, this is not that. This is us looking at Spock's relationship with his dad and having to accept that it's just not comfortable. And
yes.
And I think that that's a really good thing to put on TV because not everybody has that Mr. Beaver, whatever would have been on in the 60s, the whatever relationships we were seeing, you know, as mediums out. Like, I don't know. I wasn't
Happy Days. I don't know what was out.
Just like, I think we usually see, what do they call it? The nuclear family or whatever. Yes, that's just it, yeah. Entire bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important to not have that be what we're constantly hit over the head with. Like, relationships are complicated, especially with parents, and where maybe we want to see the Disney-esque version because you want to believe that it's all roses. It's just not always that way. And it's something to potentially strive for if you have that ability and you're with like healthy people. And this is just such an interesting example of, it's not even that it's not healthy. It's just what it is. This is Spock's dad being very logical, Spock's mom struggling with that, and then us being forced to struggle with what we want Spock to be, which is the kind of person that would stop everything from happening to save his father, because we're like, well, that's what you should do. But then he's making sense. Guys, I have hundreds of people on this ship. I have a protocol that I am like committed to. And when the mom is sort of like goes full on into this, understandably so, she doesn't want her husband to die, and she's begging Spock, he said, what do you think father would say if I abandoned my post and potentially started a war and let hundreds of people die? Like, even my dad would say, don't do that. Sacrifice one for the many. So the episode does a lot in that realm as well. But I don't know. I really appreciate being uncomfortable because it means that you kind of care, which is nice to feel when you're watching anything instead of the mindlessness. Like, I'm watching Murder, She Wrote a lot these days. I don't care at all about that. I don't care at all what happens on, if there's going to be a murder, she's going to question the police about why they can't figure it out better than she can. She's, you know, like, I have no investment, no care at all. It's just something they put up on the TV. But Star Trek continues to show me things like, oh, I care about that. Well, oh, I'm upset. Why am I upset? Oh, because I care. And that's a really cool thing to do. And it's really interesting to sort of put something out that's uncomfortable in a family dynamic. I really appreciated that.
Especially back in the 60s. Like, I am amazed whenever we dip back into the original series for things it brings up that I'm like, man, shows don't do this today. Like, we send a lot of TV content as well. And I get so like tired of some of the cliches. And like, we've seen this argument so many times. The argument between Spock and his mum that you were talking about, I don't think I've seen that argument really anywhere framed like that, because I think this episode, now that I'm thinking about it, comes more down to Amanda coming to terms with what Spock and Sarek's relationship is more than Sarek and Spock coming to terms with it, because she might be under this like impression that Spock isn't saving him because they don't have a relationship, yes, because they're bitter.
Right.
And he's like, really, as passionately as he can, explaining, no, this is about duty. I was going to save his life because I'm the only option and it's logical. But now this has happened. The circumstances has changed. The new next logical option is to do this. My dad would agree. What are you complaining about? Our relationship has nothing to do with the situation that's in front of us. We're just two neutral people. And like most humans in Star Trek, Amanda is trying to apply her humanity to a very Vulcan situation. And what I love is that the show doesn't let her do it. It doesn't let her get through to him. The only way
is through the other humans.
Is through Kirk doing something extremely human and sacrificing himself potentially so that Spock can now make the next most logical choice. And that, I want to be in that writer's room when like DC Fontana is just a freaking genius. And when they came up with that crafted like tapestry of how we're going to get everybody from A to B to C to D in an interesting and believable way, I'm just like, I'm in awe, because there's so much in this episode that gets beautifully intertwined together.
Well, Star Trek is that medium that gets to do things that are really outside of the box. by introducing a race of characters like the Vulcan. If you did this with humans, you would have someone that would be considered like a sociopath or something.
Yes,
like,
they would be. Yeah, like Dr. House. Dr. House would be making this argument.
An unfeeling person who would say, I'm going to keep driving this ship. Sorry, I'm the only person with the blood type for the person downstairs, but I got other business to do. That can't like hit the same way, because we're going to come up with a whole bunch of reasons in our head why that would never happen. But when you give it to an alien species, when you do what Star Trek has done by inventing these sort of characters, these beings, these ways of living that allow us to explore what would happen in a scenario like this one. And then they invent the scenarios as well. It's just really fun. And I think it's important. I just think it's an important thing to see it happen. And it does give the hero moment to a character, beloved, of course. And it's fun. A lot of times in modern storytelling, we wouldn't really see what the plan was. Kind of like Bones, you know, didn't tell anybody about dosing Kirk whenever they were doing the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba thing. You kind of can sometimes hold those back, but we got to be in on it, you know?
I love that, because you get to appreciate Shatner on the bridge. I think he's doing a great job of acting in pain, but covering, he's got to pretend to be in pain, pretending to cover it up yes. to convince Spock.
Yes.
And I think he does a great job of that. I think the makeup, the adding the beads of sweat is very, very subtle.
Somebody was a mister on set that day.
Completely missing his beautiful, like, can I not just go to the bridge topless? No, Shatner, sorry, you can't. The bandage will be exposed. And I love that. It's risky as it is. And then the second that Spock is finally off the bridge, he's bought the lie, whether it's just because he wants to believe it or not. And the second he's like, get Scotty up here, boom, attack. Kirk won't leave the ship in that position. And that puts a new twist on
the whole few
battles that
we've seen. Everything changes.
So many battles, but this adds an extra dynamic to the pew-pew battle of now Kirk is personally at risk until this fight is over. It's so good.
We don't really even need to have it like last for very long, but it was really fun to sort of watch the end of this episode. And true to the point about the acting as well, I was really having a good time watching the acting in this episode. Like, I could probably watch. This is maybe, I would watch this one again. Like,
yes, high praise from tonight.
I would leave this room and go watch this one again. And because I'm writing my notes a lot, and so, like, I just want to watch them act. There's something that happened, like, the first couple times that I watched TOS, and I've said it before, and I'll say it, I'm sure, many times, because it seems to be throughout. The actors in this genre, like in Star Trek world, whether it's the, you know, TOS all the way up to what we're seeing in Strange New Worlds, like any of the stuff that's coming out, they're just really committed to what they're doing. And that is what brings me in, especially for TNG, which was, of course, my gateway into Star Trek. But watching TOS is so fun, because if they fucked it up, we wouldn't have nothing.
If this wasn't so rewatchable, because that's what saved Star Trek, is TOS being rewatchable as all heck.
Yeah.
And it just kept making money. It refused to die even after being cancelled. And that's what got it a movie. It's what got it TNG. And it's because of this. It's because of these great stories and the acting.
They're all in. And I love that. And I just want to watch them do it again without having to like think about what I would want to remember for the show. You know, I just want to like watch it just to watch it. But
we're going to pause the episode and we're going to go and rewatch it immediately.
Part of it is that end scene. Because
I love it.
And it was mentioned in the chat as well. Sci-Fi Brony says he leans over in his chair a little bit more than normal. And that I noticed that as well. When he sits down, it's a little bit heavier. And he had done it earlier in this episode. And I'm sure if you've watched it all the time, you've seen him sit in that chair many, many, many times. Just sit down and do his thing and lounge.
Yeah.
But this time he did it and he was just up a little bit higher. And then the second time he plops down a little bit harder and he sinks in a little differently. And it's so well done because he is emoting as if everything is fine. Like his smile that he throws to Spock, he's like, yeah, I got this, man. Like it was so believable.
Cheeky. Get out of here, Spock.
All the times we talk about TOS, you mention their friendships and, you know, I'm lacking a lot of history of watching it happen. In fact, I really wasn't feeling it that first time I watched it because I was like, man, Bones is an ass. Like,
Bones is a dick.
What a racist fuck. My God. But this time, you know, now I'm like, oh, okay. So the ending of this episode, to see all of them back in sick bay recovering together and giving like giving him some shit and then him giving it back and being so satisfied that he gets to be the final say. And it does get to be his.
It does. It does give him the final word.
It was really satisfactory. Like, what a ride. I left him. I'm like, oh, this was a ride. This was one where the whole time you've got something to look at. It's like you're on a water slide when you go into a tunnel, but instead of it being like one of those crazy light tunnels where you're just flying through, they've added a whole bunch of different scenes you're supposed to memorize as you fly down. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's like, this episode.
This is where the camera is. Smile at the end. No, but no, I'm not. No, it's too fast. No, that end scene is so, so special. It's so great. Telling Spock to shut up, telling the captain to shh, and they both take it.
Yeah, they do. And they know they're taking it.
They do. And it's because it's so, they can both outmaneuver McCoy because he's just a good old country doctor that's just going to do his thing and doesn't care.
Going to do open heart surgery on a heart he's never done anything with before.
But in this case, they are both incapacitated and he's like, I am in charge right now. Neither of you can leave those beds.
But what makes it really work is like the little lines that they'll write for Spock where he's like, I've never seen him so happy.
Oh,
and it's
great.
True. It's a logical thing to say. And yet it is so humorous at the same time because it's a compliment, but it's a compliment in a moment when McCoy is so stressed out that it's almost like shut up. And so it's just the timing of all of that to kind of just barrel towards the end of the episode after having completed the craziness. Like we could probably talk for another hour about this episode because there's something crazy going on like all across the field. But what do you want to focus on?
Well, no, we focused on my favorite thing, which is the finale really. And the Kirk sacrifice. I think it's one of my favorite sacrifices that Kirk ever makes for his friend. The layers of I'm going to do this and hide it from Spock so that he doesn't have to make this choice and I'll put myself at risk so that he can save his dad and not feel guilty about it. I love the layers in that. The diplomacy side of the story kind of gets disappeared a little bit. I'm a sucker for that. I would love to. I know in TNG would probably focus on that a little bit more. We get a couple of scenes where the Tellarites are arguing, the Andorians have their say. I love the politics of that. I think it's probably lucky they didn't dive in too much because that just lays the foundation for stuff that TNG and Enterprise will pick up way later down the road. Like, we know that the Andorians and the Tellarites are important members of the Federation because they're part of this council that's voting about whether the Caledonians, I think, the Caledonians should be let into the Federation. But the next most interesting part for me is this sudden warp 10 ship that comes out of nowhere. Did that work for you? Or was it just like, okay, this thing does warp 10, call it. Like, I guess even at the time that was supposed to sound shocking because we'd never seen the Enterprise go beyond warp 9, I think.
Yeah. I don't know that this episode needed to have... So something that shows do is they give you the pressing time so that you feel the tension, so that whenever the show releases that tension, you feel that satisfaction, and that satisfaction makes you want to come back for more. They have something happened, they resolve that for you, so you're safe to go back because they're going to resolve a problem. So they'll manufacture tension, and they do it in a lot of ways, and we point this out in our job a lot, which is the ticking time clock, like we're out of time, you know? And so you sort of ask yourself, like, does this episode need another ticking time? And it doesn't, because you've got the heart attack thing going on. You've got Sarek, who could die at any moment. That's got its own sort of ticking time. However, it isn't really that they're going to be attacking. They position this ship as a shadow, not an attacking.
Yeah.
So the pressure is coming in three ways. You have someone killing people. You've got a heart attack, and you have a shadow hunted. You're being hunted.
You could easily drop one of those. Like,
yeah.
It would be so. And I think there was almost this thing where you have to have a space battle in there. Like, I think there's going to be a lot. There are episodes where they don't have that, but I think it was hard to resist, especially in season two when they may have had a little bit more money to do a space battle and to have some external factor. You also need Kirk on the bridge for a reason. You need something to keep him there. And an enemy vessel attacking them is about as important as it gets. So it's gonna keep him there.
Yeah, I do think that there would have been a way to write in where we didn't need another bit of tension. And maybe that's part of what propels this episode so quickly forward, is that you sort of, like, when there's a lot happening, there's a bit of you that goes into that fight or flight part of your kind of entertainment. Like, so you're in, you know, you're watching a show, but you're still feeling the reactions of like what's happening around you. And, you know, you can only just process so much cortisol, I guess. But I don't know that we needed to have a triple thing, but each of them had an element of resolution that sort of let the next one take up. So they would tick one up and then it would die out. Like, we would sort of know that it was to put to bed. So, for example, someone is killed. Could have been Sarek. Is it Sarek? We're already with Sarek, but here, there's a heart attack. So we're picking this one up here. And then we quickly find it's in the Andorian, because the Andorian attacks pretty quickly. So we put that one to bed. Now we know that what that one is. And then the next one's a heart attack is like coming in. And then behind you, all of that is this shadow kind of coming in. And it really isn't prevalent as an enemy until the end, when the other two had resolved. So
we know there's a signal coming from it, but we don't know really what it's doing. But
we know that they're sending messages of some kind to somebody. That was really interesting as well. Without that information, we probably wouldn't have known that there was a spy. So yeah, I did kind of like it. I thought the ship looked really interesting too, like the whirly kind of gig going on.
It still works for me though. Like, I know it's a lot going on, but those pieces still all intertwine really well for me. And I think it's just, it's really bold, really confident storytelling to do so much at once.
I thought it was also interesting, like, the information we get about the scout ship. I liked that we were finding something new. I liked that they were kind of curious about it. I liked that we checked in with Starfleet. No, we don't have anything in this area. Like, they're really going through what they should be doing. So it's not like Kirk is going off and, you know, being like, let's follow him or something. They have a mission. They're trying to get their people to safety. So the writers gave them a reason to not engage this ship. They gave them a reason to kind of, like, it's like going into uncharted territory and just trying to get to the next base as fast as you possibly can and keep everybody safe.
Yeah, especially when you have like 114 delegates on board that you don't want to put at risk.
Yeah, it made sense to me that there would be somebody that's got, they're on a fast run, and they explain at the end that it was a scout ship not intended to return.
Yeah, there's a, like, risk of doing what it did. Like, this isn't, like, it doesn't match any technology. And the reason is it's a technology, you know, but it's being operated in a way that you would never operate it, because it's insane. You're going to die. You're going to get blown up. So even that is a really fun spin that wasn't just like, oh, it ended because they got blown up. And the way that Kirk wins the fight is really interesting. It's a classic now, but at the time it would have been original. Drop the power down to make it look like you're dead in the water. Lure them in and then power back up and fire. Like, that has an interesting, you can always tell the episodes that are written by, like, the best, the top tier, because everything is very logical and everything. Yeah, we could just end it this way, but we're going to find this more interesting way to end it. There was one moment that I wanted to talk to you about during all of that, where Uhura has managed to make the deduction that there's a signal coming from inside the ship, but then
there's a call coming from inside the house.
Yes, exactly. But Kirk then, like, chastises her because she's got the wide beam sensors on instead of the narrow field for inside the ship. And he, like, gives her a telling off and she's like, I'm so sorry, Captain. That just felt unnecessary to me. I'm like, can we not have given Uhura that? Can we not have given her, like, a win? I don't know what benefit that has other than making Kirk look great. Look how intelligent Kirk is. He solved the fact that they were using the scanners the wrong way. Whereas I think modern Trek would have been more like Uhura gets the solution and Uhura figured it out and says, I've done it. And I feel like Spock would have got that moment. It stood out to me as like an unnecessary ego boost for Captain Kirk at the expense of Uhura.
Well, they are women. And
right. I'd forgotten about that.
Really, it's an unfortunate byproduct that is of an era, thankfully, in the past, and we don't see as much of it in media anymore. Mm-hmm. But it is a very comfortable thing to see men in the positions of, like, power and authority. You know, I think Nurse Chapel, was that Nurse Chapel in this one?
Yes, correct.
So,
yes.
So she, you know, is like, come on, nurse, tell me the stats. And then he doesn't even know what the stats mean. It's just like something for the woman to do on screen, for the woman to do on screen's sake, than it is like thinking about them as a more competent professional than anyone in the room is. So I guess I'm used to it. It didn't really bother me. I think my interpretation of that moment was like Kirk's passion for, he just found out someone's spying in his space and he's pissed.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I didn't take it initially as it be him chastising her, but I think you're right in that Spock would have been able to, he would have figured it out himself.
Yeah.
He was given time actually to figure out like the type of ship. There was a lot of like screen time given to him describing what the ship was made out of and why he couldn't scan it properly and these kinds of variables. But for her, you know, she had been doing like a wide scan and he sees that it needs to be kind of narrowed and everything. And it was an important part of figuring out where, would she have gotten there? Maybe. Would a modern telling have done it differently? Yeah, I absolutely think they would have. I think it would have been a, what are some ideas we can think of? Or just like a discussion. We usually see that kind of more, give me ideas, people. We would have seen like a captain say something like that. And so I'm like, what if we did this with the field? And then Uhura would have said something about, oh, I could, you know, instead of doing the wide, what if I recalculated this to where it would go more narrow, you know? So you're right. I think that maybe it wouldn't have been the captain that would have figured that out, because that is her area of expertise.
Yeah. And I don't see it as anything that Kirk did wrong. It's the writers. It's the one bit of the episode where I'm like, did you really need to have a dig at Uhura in that moment? Like, what does that benefit? Like, I feel like you want to elevate those people on the bridge on your TV show, like, rather than give Kirk another moment to be the hero. He's got enough in this episode to be the hero. But that's me getting super duper nitpicky. There's a couple more individual moments that I really, really love. DeForest Kelly, which is Leonard Bones McCoy, his little face lighting up when it is exposed that Spock had a teddy bear.
Oh.
His face lit up, and his smile when he gets that big grin and like the camera is just close up on him and it's like, okay, now smile. And he just goes, a teddy bear. It's such a great moment. The humor in this episode is top notch.
I think like the audience at this point is likely connecting to the Spock character.
Yeah.
The show is responding to that by giving more information about Spock and giving screen time to the story. I learned that the Live Long and Prosper was first seen in the most recent episode we watched with Spock.
Yes.
And now here we're seeing the two finger
situation.
My love situation. And we're like learning even more about like how deep does the logic go in a family dynamic. And there's a lot that they're exploring here. So I think this is a reaction to the audience being really curious about this really amazing character that Leonard Nimoy is presenting to us, and the writers are giving us this information. So I think that we want to know that there's a little humanity in there somewhere, and we learn a couple of things that are a bit heartbreaking as well, especially about the bullying. Now, I remember about the bullying because I saw this. We talked about it during Strange New Worlds. I think it came up in the conversation when I was kind of being updated on Spock, because I didn't know a bunch about him when we first started watching Strange New Worlds. And so here you get to hear the mother's point of view straight from her mouth in the very first episode that's mentioned. How powerful that was for me as a mom going, oh my God, like little Spock coming home being bullied by the, I guess, emotional assholes that are children, the even in a Vulcan.
Yeah. And we see it in the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie in 2009. We get to see a flashback of young Spock being bullied and the very logical way that the bullies bully him as well. So there is a way to do it. And it's especially, so we've covered repeatedly, yes, Vulcans have emotions, they suppress them. They don't fully suppress them until they've been through the colonar, when they're like 18, 19, 20, whatever it is. They have a full purge. So I can imagine adolescent Vulcans being more susceptible to emotional manipulation and like bullying and stuff like that. But the way that Amanda, and I can't remember the actor's name, somebody in the live chat will definitely point it out, the way she describes the story and how much it broke her heart to see her son come home, Jane Wyatt, thank you live chat, to see her son come home knowing that he couldn't express how he was feeling, because that's just going to lead to more bullying, but knowing that there is a human part of him that is crying inside. And that is such a beautiful way to write that you're, the Vulcan exterior probably wasn't showing it too much, but she knew that her human part of her that's inside him was absolutely falling apart, and she couldn't, like, she's so powerless to help the Vulcan kid process emotion. What is going on, yeah. And emotion. She oh, it's so good. There's yeah. so much in that one conversation.
There really is, and like inside of this episode as well, where you really can't sit too long on it because the show is just right. going to carry on.
It's not what this episode is about. But it really is. It's got so much more else to do.
I think it is. No, I think that's what this episode is about. Yes, is it showing is. Us the human part of Spock and the Vulcan part of Spock are Spock, and that is our character. And then they're showing us these variants of a very Vulcan father and a very emotional mother, and yeah. how, you know, it's influenced Spock, but Spock is defined in this new way by his job. And then you've got a coworker that just decides to pop over to mom during the little mixer and be like, so give me some dirt on your son. Right. And she fucking does.
She does it. But it's such a subtle way that
we need it.
We really do.
We need that little hit of a little. Now all of us in our minds get to have our own little version of what little Spock was doing with this little bitty terrifying alive teddy bear that he had, his little pet that he had, and how that would even be an illogical thing for others to do. But it was like his expression of maybe part of his humanity of wanting to, I don't know, care for something in a way that maybe the Vulcans don't relate to. And I agree with Sir Ruthie in the chat. I don't have a solution for this, but Sir Ruthie says we need to come up with a better word than humanity.
We really do.
When we talk about aliens, but we don't have it, so we're going to continue to use the word.
Yeah. And good old McCoy, get that? They address this in Star Trek, which I love so much. They address it in one of the movies. Bones literally says to a Klingon, "Where's your humanity?" And the Klingon's just like, "That's possibly the most racist thing I've ever heard." Mm-hmm. What are you talking about, humanity?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's so dumb. But I love that that moment leads to the first clue that Sarek has a connection to his son, which is you embarrassed him in front of his colleagues. That's not okay. Like, that's whether we feel embarrassment or not, he has to keep the respect of his peers, and you undermined that. And that's like, oh, yeah, you're not just a bastard. Like, there's something, there's a kernel in there. It's such a layered episode. This could have been a full movie. I'm glad it isn't, because then would I like it the same? But this episode does an incredible amount of legwork.
Yeah, I also didn't agree with that moment, though. I mean, that maybe would have embarrassed the dad, but that might not have embarrassed him. Like, you don't know what's actually embarrassing unless you actually talk to your son and he doesn't do that, so he can just kind of back the fuck off of my favorite character.
But he does. Sarek does know that humans like McCoy take that stuff and hold on to it. So whether it bugs Spock or whether it affects him at all, there's a chance that it affects the perspective of the humans, and that makes Spock's life more difficult. That's where I think he was getting to.
But that's so much assuming. That is Sarek assuming he knows more about Spock's life than he does, because he doesn't have a fucking relationship with him. So
that sounds like a parent to me.
I'm glad to see the complicated relationship. I still respect that it's on TV, but like, that to me was a leap. That was just like watching her slap him. I was like, really? Like, this is hard to watch, but I guess this is just kind of like what it is. But you don't. I'm really sensitive to the embarrassing thing, because I was raised in a family where you don't want to embarrass yourself. And so you really need to be the best version of whatever the environment gives you, so that you don't upset anybody, because you don't want to upset anybody, because that's bad. You know, like, okay, little girl, don't be you, because you're going to make people uncomfortable. So then once I sort of started feeling the resistance to that, I really leaned into it, and I quickly became their worst nightmare by not doing all of the things that, you know, a young Christian woman should be doing. Mm-hmm. And so I fought at an early age to not go to church, because I had a deep, deep conversation and my stance was, I have to be a hypocrite in order to get along with anybody. Yeah. On the one hand, you're telling me to be myself. And on the other hand, if I am myself, then I am labeled as all of these terrible things, and I don't want to be around it. So the only way for me to survive in church is to be a hypocrite and just go live my life how I want to live it over here. But when I'm in church, be an entirely different person and play along. And I didn't want to do that. And thankfully, my mom and my dad agree. And they're like, okay, we can see your turmoil. You don't have to go to church. And so I was able to stop going at the age of 13, which was a really important time to stop going for me individually. So that's like idea, like that someone tells you what's embarrassing and you don't have a chance to say it yourself really pisses me off, because that's how I live my life. So I'm really fucking sensitive to it. So when he said that, that was the most emotion I felt the entire time. Like, it was annoying to watch him get slapped, but then I'm like, oh, that's just 60s drama.
Yeah, remember when we used to slap everyone?
Yeah, it was everywhere. Like, and I felt a lot of emotion, like excitement whenever Kirk, you know, double jumped off of a wall. Yeah. But I was pissed. I was angry. And I was angry because I don't like people putting putting words into my mouth and saying like, oh, wasn't that embarrassing?
That's really fair.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that completely makes sense, because Spock hasn't had chance to talk to his mum and say, that was inappropriate, please don't do it.
Right.
Sarek is like manufacturing this perceived embarrassment, probably because maybe Amanda embarrasses Sarek in some situations like that and he can't address it. So yeah, there's some projecting going on.
There is. And it's also the writers that are wanting us to know probably that is embarrassing. Like, there isn't a conversation after this to back up whether my version of what I want the truth to be is really or not. But that's the beauty of TV. And that's the beauty of reading is you can kind of make it what you want it, you know?
That's the beauty of Star Trek. It's tapped into something that I would have never thought of and related to, because we've had completely different backgrounds in that way. So I love it. That's absolutely, I'm so glad we managed to touch on that. That's so cool.
It is a very interesting kind of moment though, where we do get to see that Sarek is invested in, because I think that was the same scene where then his mom says that you're proud of him.
Exactly. Like, because you're protecting his reputation.
Yeah. It shows that he cares because he's invested in a way. And then I know what they're trying to do. It triggered me, guys.
Yeah, totally fair. Completely fair.
And thank you, CDR, for reminding us. I'm going to say this out loud because I think this is funny. CDR Smith in the chat says, our weekly reminder that the ambassador is not a Vulcan.
She is not.
But I want to be a Vulcan.
She wants to be. With training. We'll get you through the Kolinar.
Oh my God, can you imagine if I could purge my emotions?
I am terrified of what that human would be capable of. I feel like your emotion is the only thing keeping you on the rails.
What?
Yes.
True.
Uh-huh.
I think that's true.
What you don't need to lose is your empathy. Something that triggered me was this. It's got the same score as a mock time, which is amazing. It stops short of the...
Does it really?
But the entire build-up is the same as the build-up to a mock time when Sarek arrives off of the... through the red honor guard and comes through. It's the... It stops just short of...
Oh, that's interesting, because there was like a similarity in the progression, you know?
Yes, that's
that
it.
That scene was so fucking cool.
Epic.
Can we talk about it real quick?
Let's do it.
So it's at the very beginning of the episode, and all the red shirts are gathered outside of the door and we're watching the... What?
Sorry, I just... In my head, I'm just like, you see that amount of red shirts, you assume a disaster is going to happen in the shuttle bay.
I did.
Everyone's going to die.
I did. I thought that. I was like, uh-oh.
Stay away from that row of red shirts.
But I was... So then the doors open and they kind of all file out. And then in the distance is the shuttle. So the shot is like... We're inside the Enterprise, mm-hmm. like the kind of the main corridor. And then in the foreground are, I think, Spock and McCoy.
Yeah.
And then Kirk walks through into the shuttle bay. There's the line of red shirts. And then in the distance, while we're in the foreground listening to Spock and McCoy kind of talk, you can see the door open and then people come out. And there's just this like really progression sort of mm-hmm. elegance to it. And yeah, it did remind me of
the T'Pau entrance.
Yeah, but I didn't put the two together that the same music score. Was the same.
Yeah, same score as when T'Pau's getting introduced and they're doing the build up.
But I thought that shot was really really crafty, and I couldn't tell, maybe it's because the shuttle was so far in the distance it was a bit grainy,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know if it was did they stitch it together? Was that also part of
never looked at
modern rendering?
No, I don't think so, because that would have been making up shots out of whole cloth is easier than trying to force something into the background of actors that are already there. That's probably too much for them to do just for a remaster. And they do have actual model shuttles that they've used. They have there's an episode called the Galileo 7 where they have a shuttlecraft that they've built. So they could have had that in the background,
it looked
odd.
A little misty because I think it was so far away from camera, but it worked really well because it was kind of like you could watch the progression and it built the tension and the curiosity as they got closer to camera. Like, who is it? And what's this going to be? And There was like a little Ben Gesserit sort of vibe for the mom,
from
you
the
know?
From the mom, yeah.
Yeah, so I was really
she
impressed.
She who is
with
my wife. Yes. I love the phrasing in this. It's so good. She who is my wife.
I love that. So cool. And little two fingers together. Yeah. So pretty. But I thought that was a great shot. There's a lot of...
love that.
The camera work in this is just so fun. I really enjoy the show.
It can go from really basic to really, really deliberate. And I like that.
I think this episode in particular shows a lot of fun. Like, we get to go to different places. We get to go into the sick bay. We get to go see Spock's quarters. Like, it's a really, it was a fun little run round. Like, what a great episode of Star Trek.
We mentioned this a lot, but do you think it's a good introductory episode to TOS?
No.
No? Too much?
Yes. I think this is too much for an episode of TOS.
I think it would set the bar too high. Don't worry. We don't usually we don't pack this much into an episode, like, because the pacing is so not what you usually expect from an episode of TOS.
I think this would be a good top five TOS episode. Like, if you're going to show someone five episodes only ever, and that's all they're going to watch, I think this would be an interesting one to put
in
there.
Yeah, it's got to be in there.
We see some new uniforms. We see an action.
We get the Kirk wraparound uniform that I freaking love so much. So it's got like the delta along the waistband and the like the plunging V that comes down, and it's like off white. It's like that off yellowy limey color. I love it so much, by the way.
Yeah, I really do think this would be a good one. I think it's also important too for the Spock character. So let's say that you're in a world where you're gonna watch five episodes of Star Trek from each thing. So five only of Enterprise, five only of TOS, five only of TNG. And I think this would also be good for anything that has Spock in it as well, because it just gives you a bit more. And that way you don't have to do heavy lifting later for any of his backstory. You can just like do other ones. Oh, there was also an interesting moment for learning about Vulcan stuff. When there is that fight in the mess hall, when the Telluride gets upset.
Oh, yes. And
he just flicks him away.
He does like a Jedi mind trick thing. Just puts two hands up and like, boing!
And the guy flies back and hits the wall.
It's so good.
Even that would give you a little bit of information about how strong they are.
You can just
kind of see it. Because this has a lot in it for Vulcan setup, for Spock in particular. And I think it's also a really good episode for Kirk because... it's a reminder of how Kirk is a leader, how Kirk is a able to like handle diplomat, and also how Kirk is a friend. So it kind of shows all these different sort of varieties.
It's a beautifully well-rounded episode for Kirk, for Spock, Kirk, McCoy as a trio as well. Space battle as well. Mm-hmm. I love that Kirk gets to be a diplomat at the beginning when he says, regardless of what your opinions are, the decision isn't being made here. The vote is being made on Babel. Whatever you talk about now is completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that is really logical. And Sarek respects that and says a very logical decision. He gets to be that. And he has that little off-kilter smile as well in the moment where he's diffusing the situation with his charm.
Yes.
Great, great moments for Kirk overall. Adore this episode. Absolutely. See why this could make anybody's list. Immediate pips, four pips for me. There was one last line I wanted to mention, although it's a little bit cringy because they're all piling onto Amanda a bit unfairly. Spock says, is she always this emotional? And Sarek's like, yep, she is. Spock's like, why did you marry her? At the time, it seemed like the logical thing to do. That is the highest praise. And if I ever get married, that is what I will tell my children and grandchildren. At the time, it was the logical thing to do. It's the most, like, emotional...
Hopefully it remains logical.
Yes, exactly.
That's the goal.
If it remains logical. At the time, it was illogical. Yeah, it may not be now. But it is a compliment. Like, why did we get married? It was logical. That's high praise coming from a Vulcan.
It is.
And I love that.
And considering I'm a Vulcan... that'll be something that I should say. I'm not a Vulcan.
You want to be.
I think I'm an Orion.
You can aspire. You're not an Orion.
Yeah, I'm just a...
You do have some tend energy.
I've got some tender G.
Yeah, an aspiring Orion.
Yeah.
Well, with that...
what am I?
Thank you, Sarah.
Obviously I'm human, but that's boring.
While the ambassador has an identity crisis, let's head over to engineering to do some sins. Battle stations, red alert.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal.
all that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. I will start off with just parental problems cliche. Like, heaven forbid we have an episode of content ever where the parents just get along. And like, it really, really, like, I guess it just speaks to, is there a parental relationship out there that is healthy and that actually doesn't have its issues? But yeah, it is something that gets covered in content a lot.
Mine, I have a couple, but I think this is the biggest one for me, was letting the prisoner onto the bridge just to walk around.
Right. Do not let the prisoner on the bridge.
I mean, this is no a prisoner need. Who was already taken out, tried to take out a red shirt and almost succeeded when they went down to try to figure out how the Fodorian was getting. So they've already shown signs of being able to fight and resist. And he's literally just standing around there inches from anyone. If he had a hidden weapon or mm-hmm. could grab a weapon.
I assume he's been searched, but who knows but even hidden still, secret things they right. have. Yeah,
I mean, they don't even know what species he is. What if there's, I don't know, a hidden tentacle somewhere that has like yeah. a little spike on the end? There's all kinds of things that could right. happen. And it's just, they brought him up just to witness his fellow people blow themselves up.
Yeah, he's not going to talk.
He really doesn't serve a purpose except for to reveal why the enemy is doing what the enemy has done.
Yeah.
Which is important for us to do, to put a little bow onto that.
Yeah.
But at least keep him restrained to a chair or something.
In cuffs, in shackles, something like that. Something like yeah, that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that the Andorians, so the Orions, actually got a little bit unlucky here because they tried to frame Sarek for the murder by doing the Now, it's not Tau Shiar, because that's the secret Romulan
that's
police.
That's the secret Romulan police.
Tau Shiar? It's very, very close to Tau Shiar. Tau Shiar neck thing. But they got a little bit unlucky, because they picked the one person to frame who had an unknown secret medical condition that gave them basically an alibi and proved that they couldn't have done it. So they got very, very unlucky. Like, they didn't even have to be that specific. Just, like, kill the Tellarite. And just leave it up in the air a little bit more. Don't pin it on anybody, but they got unlucky pinning it on Sarek.
My other sin is that Scotty was told to come to the bridge to take over and he never shows up, so.
Oh, he cancelled that call. He said cancel it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I missed that
Yeah,
part.
As soon as the ship started like attacking, Kirk cancelled the
call. Okay, I missed that part. Because I'm like, where's Scotty?
Yeah, where is he?
He's taking his time.
I would love him to be. Actually, that's the only thing this episode is missing is some Scotty.
Can you imagine if this episode had Scotty at the helm during a battle while Kirk is like forced to just sleep?
I mean, there are plenty of times when Scotty is in charge because Kirk is on the planet and Scotty has to take the command decisions and do the battle and stuff. Because you know what? Maybe the captain shouldn't be on all of the fucking away missions.
Okay, well then that's a cancelled sin for me. Okay, yeah. Go on.
That leads into one of my cancelled sins, because originally I was going to sin Kirk for not calling sickbay after the attack. He calls the bridge, but that's actually a sin removal for me because it speaks to Kirk's character that he didn't call for help. He called for security. He called to the bridge and said, there's a murderer here. Because what if the Andorian wakes up before Kirk does? So his first priority is to make sure that security gets down there. He talks to Spock and that the Andorian is apprehended and that he knows it's not Sarek. Because what if Kirk dies and can't translate any of this information? So instead of calling a medical team to assist him, it's security first and then hopefully medical will get to me. So I may be reading too much into that, but I love that his priority is to report what happened to Spock rather than get medical attention.
I'm gonna go to the chat because I don't really have a lot. I was enjoying it too much. Oh, this one made me laugh. This is from Sci-Fi Brony Sin. Warp 10, they're going to turn into salamanders.
So there is a...
Oh, is that an actual thing?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, there's a...
I just thought it was an example. I thought it was a random example of just turning into something.
No, this is real. There is a cabal, and I'm calling them a cabal deliberately, of people on Discord who are campaigning for the Voyager episode Threshold, where this happens, to be in this season. And I said, if you can wholeheartedly put that on your list of favorite Trek episodes ever, and I buy it, then we'll do it. But I don't think it's on anyone's favorite list.
Okay, it's just crazy.
It's fucking insane. They turn
okay, well
in,
then we need to have a season of fucking insane.
We do need a season of fucking insane episodes. Yeah, okay. That might be what we do next.
Oh,
we'll
I like
save it.
It
for that.
Okay.
My next one is at the opening of the episode, Kirk does a captain's log and says the issues of the council are politically complex, which is right to talk for. We don't really want to explain it.
We don't
want to talk about. It's not important. It's not really what the episodes are about. Also, sin on me for calling them Caledonians. I think they're Catarans. I still haven't got the name right.
Catarans?
Cadillacs? My next sin was Sarek waiting until he was in a public room to take his meds. No need for that at all. He slips a pill while the Tellarite is looking at him. Like, you really should have done that in private, not at the buffet table.
Why not? Why can't you take your meds in public?
Because he's keeping the fucking thing secret.
At that point, he's hiding the heart disease. I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to read this one from Flyboy. This is about the slap. I struggled a lot with whether to send the slap. On the one hand, it's a relic of time when parents, including mine, were pretty casual about corporal punishment. Corporeal?
It is.
But that's not it.
It's a corporeal punishment.
It's a corporeal. Yeah. Let's change it now.
Now we have non-corporeal punishments.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
On the other hand, it's a powerful statement for someone as obviously gentle and peaceful as Amanda to be so frightened for and frustrated with her family that she explodes. Ultimately, ding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else can she do? Like, she has been logicked into violence, which is what Vulcans think is the problem with humans. And it's why Sarek is so annoyed that Spock is with Starfleet. Because he's just like, you go into Starfleet and you're rooting to in guns and laser beams, whereas you could be advancing society through the Vulcan Space Academy, which doesn't have as many pew-pews. That's his big issue.
Do you have another one?
Yeah, I do. You know what you don't want to hear your heart surgeon saying in the middle of heart surgery?
I've never done this before.
Man, I wish I knew if that blood pressure was good or not. He hasn't operated on a Vulcan before. But you should at least know what the fucking blood pressure should be. I'm not a doctor and I know that. Like, it's wild that he's like, it's funny for the audience, but you are a doctor. You should know what the blood pressure is on a Vulcan.
Yes, wild. I completely agree. Sci-Fi Brony mentioned this one and it's something that I thought when I saw it and it definitely is a sin. Because Chapel sedates Spock while he's trying to speak about something important. And I don't know why. Now
go to sleep.
He was trying to get out of the machine and they had all just as a group decided that they're going to knock Spock out and make sure that he can save his dad. Like, protocol be damned. Yeah. You're going to stay down. And so it was like this group decision on Spock's behalf, which I think Spock should probably have a conversation with them all at some point about how his agency was taken away. But
completely.
In that moment, she goes over and she sedates him. And when I watched it, I was like, did she just make him pass out? And then she sets down like a syringe. I wasn't entirely sure until this sin popped up. Yeah. But he was saying something. And why not like listen to that and convey it? And I had that in my notes. What was he saying? Who should know about this? Yep. And it absolutely is a sin.
That was my final sin as well. Like, take a pen and paper down. Like, guess what? You have communication ability. Write down whatever it is Spock is saying. Then sedate him. Because the ship is falling apart around you. You are under attack. Like, and you know it's Spock. It's not like it's some random person that could be wrong. If Spock is choosing to share this information, there's a good chance he's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he was.
He was.
He was right.
Yeah.
The chat is also exploding that Amanda should not be in the room while the heart surgery is happening, which is fair. No, she should not. She should not.
No, I mean, maybe. I don't know, guys. If my child was having surgery or my husband was having surgery and I was allowed to be there, I think I would be there.
Yeah, but like, she's kind of like on top of the table. I feel like she'd get underfoot.
I would be afraid of her slapping me, but that's about it.
Yeah. That's fair. That's
this is a sin removal that I liked. The correct lights flicker for the orders to shut down port and starboard side. That's a good attention to detail.
Yes, correct.
I thought that was kind of a clever thing we didn't talk about, but that was clever, wasn't it?
No, I was going to sin that moment, but I didn't write it down because the internal lights don't matter. They can't see them. So that was all for
the audience.
Yeah, it wasn't for the Orions because the Orions can't see inside the bridge.
You just
need the external lights to go down and start drifting. Anything else, Ambassador?
Nope, that's it for me.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Sarah, for that suggestion. I am over the moon with how much the Ambassador loved that episode. It's always fun going into these because I know I'm going to love them, and I'm pretty certain that she is, but when you really, really love an episode, it's so fun. And I think we're on a string of 5 or 6 4 out of 4 Pippers.
Like, it's not a surprise. I mean, we're watching people's favorites. And yes. I think what's really great is that they're favorites for a reason. Even the baseball episode, even though it wasn't something that I would watch, I still appreciate that it's like, it's good TV. Yeah. They're doing a good job making good shows.
It's why this season is so much fun. If I do say so myself.
Well done. Good thinking. Well, pat on the back.
Next week's episode, the Ambassador and I are doing a little bit of traveling, so we are going to be releasing Buffer Time 2, The Wrath of Cat. So we're going to have a Buffer Time episode in your feed next week, so it won't be an episode to cover, but it will be some lovely chats that we're going to have that I think Star Trek comes up occasionally, and some other various stories that you won't have heard. This will all be brand new, fresh content. And then the following week, this is really interesting. I had scheduled the animated series, the first ever episode that we're going to be covering. So there were 2 episodes that were emailed in. One, The Counterclock Incident, and Yesteryear. I was going to go with The Counterclock Incident because I prefer it. However, we definitely have to pivot into Yesteryear after watching this episode, and the Ambassador will find out why that's crucial next time. So the homework for 2 weeks from now will be the animated series, season 1, episode 2, Yesteryear. We have a backlog of emails to get to. We have not forgotten you. We will definitely be getting to them at some point. We may stick some into the Buffer Time episode next week. So keep sending them in, and your favorite episodes of Star Trek, to CaptainsPod@CinemaSins.com or Discord.gg/CinemaSins, where we have a lovely Captain's Pod channel. Ambassador, do you have anything to plug before I get this hair out of my face?
Nope.
Great. we will see you next week for a Buffer Time episode, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for a proper episode of Captain's Pod. And until then, I'm Captain Ian, and threats are illogical, and payment is usually expensive from me.
And it's shh from me.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through CaptainsPod@CinemaSins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Oh my gosh, do you think people really like to hear that? Someone said that they like to hear us sing in the chat. I just don't believe them at all.
No one has ever emailed to say, hey, please stop that. I assume they just skip it if it's unbearable.
Okay, so that's a pretty good light for me, but I don't know how that is for you, because I've got a ring light as well.
We will see. Let me go into...
Do you have a ring light that you brought with you?
No, I do not, actually.
I guess...
I was trying not to bring anything that...
that would make you look like a porn star.
Yeah, that's what they often ask me at the border. Hey, sir, you look like a porn star. Could you please confirm that you are not, in fact...
It's the mustache.
A porn star. Hey! There is a beard attached to this mustache.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in fact, there is a human being attached to this mustache. I am more than a mustache. More than a mustache.
More than a mustache to me. I want to be
nice. I want to know what love is. Sorry, I just oversang you. I know that's...
Okay, let's go live. Let's do it. Brutal. It's showtime, Ian.
Fuck. Shit.
God. Uh-oh. Oh, God damn it.
You okay?
I don't know.
Something's beeping. Shit. Maybe the house is on fire. Shit, I'm in the house.
At least if I go down, you're going with me.
Yeah. That's fair.
Go down together.
Yeah.
Me and you.
You
arm
are
in
damn
arm.
Straight. Yeah,
clinging
on
to
fire.
Each other, talking about Captain's Pod to the very end.
Seeing how much we can nail our boimler scream as the flames lick at our feet.
The perfect end to the show. Ian will end up accidentally recreating the climax of Star Trek Generations. What? Why?
Well, it would be, you've seen Generations. You know what happens in that movie. The Enterprise gets blown up. But it's not that Enterprise.
I don't remember that at all.
You don't, what, you?
Hold on a second. I have no memory of this place.
The saucer section separates because the Klingon bird of prey has fired torpedoes through the shields. And then Data says, oh shit. And then they
Data
start.
Data doesn't say oh shit.
He says oh shit.
He does not.
He does.
No, he doesn't.
He does.
He's an android.
He says oh shit. He has language.
No, he doesn't.
And then he goes, they fly the saucer section into the planet. And then it like disc golfs itself through a forest.
Did you say disc golf?
Disc golf, yeah. It's like it ends up being a disc and it just like planes itself through a forest. And no one dies.
I do remember a bunch of trees.
Did you remember the saucer section of the Enterprise flying through them?
I think so. I think at the time we were talking about how they just don't make them like they used to.
Wait, what was it? I don't think we talked about that. We did. Sorry, we did. Yeah, I'm sorry. We did. We absolutely did. Because physical models. I was like, that was a physical model that they crashed into shit. And it looks glorious.
Oh, the emotion chip. Is that when he drank alcohol? It tasted terrible.
Yeah, it tastes revolting. Yeah. And he pushes Beverly off the side of the ship.
Oh, I liked that part. I think I was the only one that liked that part.
Yeah, I know. I love that part. I think Beverly massively overreacts. And Geordi's like, that was not funny. And we're like, it was fucking funny.
Thank you for coming to our live taping of Captain's Pod today.
It's not a taping.
I wanna make it a thing. Is it not a thing? Can I not make it a thing?
You can absolutely make it a thing. I think me correcting you is the thing. I want my babel back ribs.
I wonder if that's what an Andorian antennae tastes like a little rib.
Oh my gosh. I don't think so. I imagine it's more sinewy. It's probably like it would all be bone
just
marrow.
Just a chewy bone marrow.
But the squid thing that you have battered.
What's
it called?
Pig's anus.
No, in the Japanese restaurants. Someone will know. It's a little squid battered. But calamari, thank you. Got it. No help from the chat needed.
Did you know that there was a company that did calamari that was actually pig butt?
Yes, I did.
For those of you that don't know about that beautiful episode, I'm going to find the episode title so that you guys can go listen to it yourself.
Yeah, but it's a whole story.
Calamari pig butt. Yeah,
it's a whole story about calamari.
Let's see.
How it doesn't really matter what you're eating, as long as it's edible.
So it was a This American Life episode investigated the claim that pork bung was packaged and sold as imitation calamari.
To be fair,
according to the AI overview from Google, found no evidence that anyone had ever tried to pass off pork bung as calamari in a restaurant. However, it was an entire show.
However, genuinely, fuck Google AI. Like, I mean, I love you, AI, but fuck Google's version. Because I Googled this morning who was the attackers at the end of the episode because I couldn't remember who they were.
Orions.
And Google AI confidently told me it was the Klingons, gave me a reason for why it was the Klingons and how they wanted to destabilize the Federation, and gave me like six paragraphs about how it was the Klingons. And I'm like, it's not the Klingons, though. And of course, it's the Orions. So Google AI I would not rely on it as of yet.
Why am I Bajoran? Yeah, why? Because I don't know anything about Bajorans, really.
Feisty. Bajorans are feisty freedom fighters. Feisty freedom fighters.
Bajorans are emotional, passionate, and opinionated. That's me. That's me. And they have cool earrings. That's also me.
And they like spicy food.
I like spicy. I'm learning to like spicy food. I feel like I am a tendy, though. Like,
you are. You're the most tendy all of the people on Lower Decks. I thought you were Mariner, but you are much more tendy.
I definitely related to Mariner when we first started watching that show, though.
Yes, absolutely. She has the do what I want vibe.
Yes.
Do what I want.
Yes. I think I'm often in a Mariner position, but I want to be more tendy.
That's a perfect way to do it.
I'm often in leadership positions where I have to kind of like...
Yes.
Wrestle my chaos energy and lead the people through.
People are relying on me. Shit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I wish sometimes that I was just like, I just want to geek out on one thing all day long and have no additional responsibilities and then just be able to go hang out with my buds and be silly.
But also you're really good at being the leader. So you end up, when you're forced into it, like a mariner, you do a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. With me as... what the fuck? That was... How did I mess that up?
What did you mess up?
I forgot to introduce myself.
Oh.
That's amazing. This is so interesting because next week's episode, I planned to be... No, backpedal.
That's not backpedal at nope. all. That's more slurping. How do you backpedal?
All righty.
Oh, maybe I should actually go to the place that I'm supposed to be.
To the thing in the place with the dude. I should probably be in StreamYard.
Shut up. You don't even know.
You don't even know.